Nelson Adoda looking in, looking for someone, has to get it in, finds Fudd. Fudd gets it to the corner. Westbrook finds Williams, and that is the dagger! Williams lays it in. 4-point game. The streak lives.
And boring, and more boring. UConn in the Final Four again. UConn women, as you just heard, 14 consecutive times going to the Final Four. Last night won the regional final as a 2 seed, basically hosting it against a 1 seed because UConn needs extra. The equivalent would be Duke as a 2 seed playing Gonzaga in a few miles away from campus. That'd be equivalent.
Yeah.
You know, or KU as a 2 seed. Oh, well, actually, let's go back. UCLA is a 2 seed against Kansas, a 1 seed in L.A., which happened back in 2007. Sometimes those things happen. You know, Houston was in San Antonio, but that didn't pay off for them when they played Villanova. But anyway, UConn women win in double overtime, 91-87 last night. Paige Bueckers, I'm sure they're glad to have her back, 27. She missed some time due to injury. So it'll be Stanford versus Connecticut in one semifinal Friday night in Minneapolis, 8:30. In the Wichita region, number 1 seed Louisville moved on with a win over Michigan 62-50. So it'll be the Cardinals of Louisville against top seed and overall top seed South Carolina on Friday night at 6 o'clock. UConn, Stanford, the marquee game at the late night slot at 8:30. That'll be on Friday. Of course, Saturday will be the men's Final Four. KU and Villanova pregame at 4:30, tip off at 5:09 from New Orleans, followed by Duke and North Carolina after that one. And once again, pregame show on Saturday on Z96.3 Lake. If KU makes it, national championship game, we'll have that for you as well on Monday night on Z96.3 The Lake. More on KU coming up in a little bit, along with Royals baseball and a St. Louis Cardinal. He used to be a Cardinal. Now he's back as a St. Louis Cardinal. I'll tell you who that is. And the Chiefs, who they might target in NFL draft, plus the NBA regular season, is winding down. But first, local sports for last night, the Beloit baseball team. I was there to watch every pitch for 6 hours from 4 o'clock to 10 o'clock. We ended at 9:53, and it was a little colder than we anticipated. I was not prepared. My wife, in between games, ran home and got me a comforter, and I said, get my winter coat that I hung up for the 16th time this year in the closet thinking I'd never need it again. And bring me gloves, bring me a stocking cap, basically bring me everything I should have brought, but I didn't know it was going to be so cold, and then with the wind. And so it was 6 hours of baseball, basically. Of course, they have the break in between games. And it at least was worth it for the Beloit fans, not so much for the Concordia fans, as Beloit last year only won a couple of games, and they already won 2 games to start this year. They beat Concordia 9-8. They were up 6-1, 7-3, and then Concordia tied it. But Beloit was able to score a couple of runs and then eventually win the game. Concordia had a chance to win it in the top of the seventh, or I should say take the lead, because Beloit would have had a chance to hit again. And they had runners at third and second, lead run at second, tying run at third, but a line out to the first baseman, Owen Eilert. And that was hard hit ball, but Owen made a nice play and right down the line, covering the line luckily. And Beloit survived and won that one 9-8. I'll tell you, this team last year would have lost that game. And we talk about the basketball team for Beloit, you know, lost some games, and now this year they learned how to win as they get a little more mature. Beloit's still a pretty young team, play a lot of sophomores. Then the second game, Beloit was up 5-2. Concordia was up 7-5 going to the bottom of the sixth. Beloit scored 5 runs, up 10-7. Concordia won in the seventh, but really never fully threatened to tie the game there. And Beloit wins the doubleheader 9-8 and 10-8 in a marathon doubleheader that took almost 6 hours to complete last night. We finished at 9:53. I know, because I looked at my clock and said, whoever had the over at 10 o'clock just lost. And so Beloit is 2-0, and Concordia, they are now off to a 0-4 start. And the baseball team kicked off their season last night, and now the varsity softball team will kick off their season today, Dustin.
Yeah, I believe softball getting underway today, also against Concordia as they host the Lady Panthers here. Lady Trojans coming off of a 17-5 finish last year and lost a hard one a tough one there in the regional semis to Hoisington that finished their season a year ago. But they do have 4 all-league players back this year, and so a good group of girls coming back for the Lady Trojans here this season. And, you know, they're going up up against a Concordia team that did lose some talent, but they have a pretty good pitching staff as well. So returners include Chloe Odell and Kimberlyn Nichols, Peyton Remus and Trinity McMillan that were all league selections last year. So a great group of players coming back here for Coach Odell and the Boletti Trojans. So, again, they'll start this afternoon with a doubleheader against Concordia, and that'll be at 4 o'clock over in Beloit. So that's what's coming up here today for them. Real quick, I'll go over the rest of the schedule for games today, and then we're going to have hear from Coach Tyler Odell of the Boletti Trojans in softball today. Sylvan Lucas Lincoln, Leti Mustangs will also start their season with a doubleheader against Republic County in Belleville at 4 o'clock. And then the Lincoln Sylvan Lucas Leopard baseball team faces Republic County in Lincoln at 4 o'clock this afternoon in a doubleheader. So you can find the full schedule of baseball and softball games. There's other teams from the North Central Activities Association that will be playing today. So you can find all that and all the spring sports schedules at ncksports.com.
And you had a chance to catch up with head coach of the boys softball team, Tyler Odell. And here's what he had to say about opening season and getting ready for a year that should be pretty successful for Beloit Lady Trojan softball.
And welcome back here on the Sports Ticket on Kitty Country 94. We're pleased to be joined by Tyler Odell, the head coach of the Beloit Lady Trojan softball team. Coach, getting set for another season here in 2022, and coming off last year when he went 17-5, 8-2 in the league, had a tough loss in the regional semifinals in Class 3 a season ago to end your season. But you do have almost everybody back. You had one senior all-leaguer in Jenna Loomis that graduated, but you have all-leaguers Chloe Odell, Kimberlyn Nichols, Peyton Remus, and Trinity McMillan was an honorable mention selection as well, all back for you this year. So kind of a little bit different look from last year as you have more experience this year. What are your thoughts on the group and how things are going as you've gotten practice started?
Yeah, things are going really well. I think we didn't lose a whole lot, over the break and everything. There were a few girls that did some summer ball and are playing some travel stuff. So I thought we started out fast. We've got a very competitive JV group, which is really helping us. Right now, we can do some scrimmage situations and things like that. And I've been very impressed with the freshmen that have came in, and they're challenging us in practice. And that's, we haven't had that a lot in the past because we just haven't had the numbers like we have now. So that's really helping us out, and we're excited to see what we can do.
I know when we talk about Beloit softball in the past, one of the biggest things when you're successful is your strength is in your pitching. And when you look at your team here this year, how do you feel about the way that looks as you get ready to start the season here?
Yeah, we've got Kimberlyn and Chloe coming back, and they seem to be really strong right now. I couldn't ask for a better combination. Those two are different in their spin and delivery, and so it really helps to keep teams, so they don't pick up on us quite as quick. And really looking forward to those two. We've got some younger pitchers coming up, too, that are excited about. Olivia Wright is a freshman coming in, excellent pitcher. And so we're excited about her. And then we've got Cindy Thompson coming back also. She did a great job with JV last year and spins the ball well. Is very consistent. So I'm really excited about our pitching staff. Haley Channel's been working on some pitching as well. Peyton Remus is also there for us. I'm excited about that part. And they're really, really working well together.
Just as far as an all-around unit, what are some of the things that stand out the most about this year's team?
I think these girls just really, really like softball. Mm-hmm. They like to be outside. They seem to have fun in practice, and they still work hard and button down when they need to. But for the most part, they seem to really enjoy it. And there's always in every season, I think in every sport, there becomes a grind there, where, mm-hmm. whereas, practice can get a little monotonous and you try to, get things fired up somehow. But, we practice for a little over 3 weeks and we've had to be inside some, and their spirit still seems to be pretty good. So they're excited to play. So we're ready to go.
Varsity opening the season with Concordia. As you look at the Leti Panthers this year, what are some of the things that stand out about their team, and what do you expect to see?
Yeah, I think they're going to be strong. They've got a great pitcher, Hannah Akre. She's back, and she plays high-level ball in the summer. So, you know, anytime you have a great pitcher that you got to face, you know, it's always scary. You never know, you know, if you can get the ball in play and what can you do with it. So I don't know much about their fielding. I know they lost a few seniors last year that were important to them. But, you know, Concordia's always tough. They always play well. So you know, it's we don't look past anybody. That's one thing that I learned quickly in high school softball. You don't look past anybody because you never know what could happen. So,
Tyler Odell, the head coach of the Lady Trojan softball team, getting set to start their season against the Concordia Panthers today. Coach, thanks for the time, and best of luck this season.
Thank you.
Yeah, so again, Beloit Concordia today starting their seasons this afternoon in that doubleheader. You can head over to Beloit and watch it if you're interested in that. Get things started at 4 o'clock this afternoon there at the softball field just to the south of Beloit High School there. So if you're interested in that, check that out. Again, all the schedules, everything you need to know about local sports here in North Central Kansas, ncksports.com.
All right. As I mentioned, the KU Jayhawks will be in the Final Four for the 16th time in school history. They're in the Final Four in 2012. That happened also to be in New Orleans. KU won the semifinal matchup against Ohio State and then lost in the final at Kentucky. Of course, 2018, they lost in the Final Four, got blown out by Villanova in San Antonio, and that's KU is going to play is Villanova coming up on Friday night. Gary Parrish has an article on CBSSports.com and basically saying, listen, no knock on KU. They are where they are. They beat who they're supposed to beat. But how good is this team for Bill Self compared to other teams that Bill Self has had? And we've said this before. We talked about on the show. Your best team doesn't always win a championship. And for many coaches, it's maybe their third, fourth, fifth best team during their time that wins a championship. And sometimes it's about who you play. You know, like we talked about it, I will still contend that the Beloit football team that lost in the sub-state finals to Scott City in Beloit was a better team than the year after when they went to the state championship game. And I think a lot of people knowing those two teams would agree with me. Mm-hmm. If they played each other head-to-head, that type of thing, and granted there are players on both teams because they returned and this and that, but the better team was a team lost in the semifinals. I can tell you that the Beloit boys basketball team that lost in the sub-state finals of Scott City, a battle of number one and number two in the state in Beloit, and lost by 1 point, Scott City then rolled to a state championship. I can tell you that team that didn't make it to state was better than probably a few teams that Beloit has taken to state. Sometimes it's about breaks. Sometimes it's about matchups. You don't apologize. You just take your team as far as you can go. And Bill Self, I mean, once again, you know, it's kind of like Bruce Weber in K-State. Yeah, okay. Did you get helped out that Virginia lost to UMBC? Well, of course you did. But that's not your fault. That's Virginia's fault for losing. And so you beat who you're supposed to beat. They did, and then they lost the Elite Eight to the Loyola of Chicago, a team that many people thought they should have beaten. It was a great opportunity. The path was set there. Well, the same thing for KU. The path is set, and it's all sitting there for KU. And granted, they haven't had to play the toughest teams in this tournament. Obviously, Texas Southern is not, you know, very good, 16 seed. They beat Creighton barely, but they did find a way to win. And, of course, Providence, they had a great defensive effort. And Providence is a legitimate team. It's just that they don't have a name on their jersey. You know, if KU would have beaten Villanova instead of Providence, don't you think the narrative would be different right now?
Oh, yeah.
So, to me, that's kind of misleading. And then they play Miami of Florida, and people treat that like that was a gift because they're a 10 seed. They blew out the 2 seed. I mean, they blew out the 2 seed, who happened to be number one this year for a few weeks, that won the SEC.
Yeah.
So it is interesting how we spin these things because we get stuck on the seed line. But KU's had an easier path than Duke, yeah. Have they had an easier path than North Carolina? Yeah. Have they had an easier path than Villanova? I don't know. I mean, look at Villanova and who they beat. I mean, Houston's a good team. Providence is a good team. Villanova didn't have to play Arizona. They didn't have to play the one seed. So you look at some of these things and you say, okay, KU, it's set up. They're under the radar. They're number one seed. Not a lot of people talking about them. They're going to talk a lot about Carolina Duke as we established yesterday in Coach K's final run to a championship, blah, blah, blah. But Gary Parrish in his article talks about the teams that Bill Self's had that are better than this year's team. And I think that's part of the angst that people put on Bill Self. Bill Self's so good every single year, never worse than a four seed, that there's these, they're not unrealistic expectations, but he's so consistent. He always gets one, two, three, or four seeds, and rarely does he get four seeds. It's usually one, two, usually it's one or twos. And so you say to yourself, well, he had all these great teams. It's just, this article just amplifies the fact that he had teams that should have made it to the Final Four, and this year's team did, and a lot of people, including myself, didn't think they would get there. You know, 2008 was the best team Bill Self's ever had at Kansas. That had basically pros all the way across the board in their starting lineup for the most part. Russell Robinson played overseas. Sasha Kahn played. They were pros, though. They're not NBA pros, all of them. Darrell Arthur had a long career in the NBA. Brandon Rush had a long career in the NBA. Mario Chalmers, of course, won championships with Miami Heat, with LeBron and others. I mean, KU, Sharon Collins was a very good player, but we knew it probably wouldn't translate because he had a tendency to be overweight going into the NBA and so forth and so on. So when you look at KU in 08, that team was pretty much loaded, and that was his best team, and they won it all. But Gary Parrish points out different teams that are better than this year's team, and he goes one by one. You know, the 2010 KU team, to me, certainly was better. That was a number one overall seed. You had Cole Aldrich, Sharon Collins, and, of course, they lost to Northern Iowa in the second round. And the 2011 team was better than this year's team. You had the Morris twins. You had Tyshawn Taylor, Thomas Robinson, Josh Selby, although he didn't do a lot there that year. They lost to VCU in the Elite Eight. That's a game they should have won. 2014, you had Joel Embiid, Andrew Wiggins. I should just stop there. Perry Ellis, Wayne Selden, Frank Mason, Tariq Black, who all, by the way, played in the NBA for a while, and he was coming off the bench on that team. But Embiid didn't play in the tournament. He was hurt.
Yeah.
And Wiggins, we know, was an alpha dog, and they lost in the second round to Stanford. But there's no question that team was more talented. The 2016 team that lost to Villanova in the Elite Eight, that game, Devontae Graham had foul trouble, so forth and so on. And KU was more talented. They had, on that team, they had Perry Ellis, Frank Mason, Wayne Selden, who's playing NBA or G League back and forth, Devontae Graham playing NBA, and Landon Lucas. You could argue the 16 team was better than this team. And you can even, you obviously can say the 2020 team was better. They were number one overall seed that didn't get to play because of COVID. Mm-hmm. You had Udoka Azubuike, Ochai Agbaji, still a good player at the time. Devon Dotson, outstanding point guard. Isaiah Moss was a good outside shooter. Marcus Garrett, a tremendous defender. And so where does this KU team rank? They've won their games by an average of 12.5 points, which they got two blowouts in there, Texas Southern and, of course, Miami, Florida, skews that a little bit. They're going to now play a Villanova team that lost its second-leading scorer and best perimeter defender to a torn Achilles in Justin Moore. And KU's a 4.5-point favorite right now against shorthanded Villanova. So they should be in the national championship game if they play like they're capable of playing. But this is probably the sixth best team, and maybe we're missing one, where this is Bill Self's now 19 seasons coaching this team. He's taken them to 18 tournaments. It would have been 19 if they had a tournament.
Yeah.
And they've been the 9 Elite Eights, and this is 4 Final Fours, and he's got just the 1 championship. So it's a chance to get a second. And there's not a lot of coaches that have 2 national championships as head coaches in college men's basketball. You can count them on 2 hands. So there's not many that win more than 1 championship. Bill Self has a great chance to do that this year with probably his 6th best team, as Gary Parrish points out. But isn't that how it usually works, though? You win champion. Like, Duke, when they beat Butler for the national championship team, that was not, I thought, one of Coach K's top 5 teams.
Yeah.
You know, and Duke won a game against UNLV after they lost by 30 the year before. And, you know, many people felt like Duke wasn't better than UNLV, but that night they were. They had a great game plan. You know, KU in 88, we know there's tons of teams that are better than an 88 KU team.
For sure, yeah.
But they got hot, and they had a stud, Danny Manning, that carried them, and they had some good role players, and they had an outstanding coach in Larry Brown. But what about that? You know, that KU, this is their 6th best team. Should we really care? I don't think we should care, because this team is going to be remembered more fondly than the 2011 team with the Morris twins that lost to VCU when Brady Morningstar and Tyra Reed couldn't buy a 3-pointer. This team's going to be remembered better than the 2010 team that lost to Northern Iowa. They're going to be remembered more than the 16 team that lost to Villanova in the Elite Eight. And I'll give you another team that he leaves out here. When KU lost in the Elite Eight to Oregon in Kansas City, that team was better. I think this is the 7th best team for Bill Self. And yet it's only the fourth team he's taken. So if you really want to judge it, you can say, well, this is the fourth best team he's had. I think this team's better than the 18 team. I think this team is better than the 18 team that made it to the Final Four. I think collectively they're just better defensively, at least right now.
Yeah.
I think it, you know, it's probably, you know, you're splitting hairs a little bit. But they also got the better matchup. They're not playing the Villanova team that could make 23s and cause all kind of problems and was deep off the bench. They're taking a Villanova team that's depleted even more with an injury. So you kind of like what you said. You had this gut feeling that this might be KU's year. The stars are aligning for Kansas. And if they beat Villanova, and I say if they beat Villanova, because that's not guaranteed.
No.
Wouldn't shock me if Villanova wins in an ugly, ugly game and KU's throwing up bricks. But then they'll play probably a team that's coming off an emotional high. And it's one thing to play a team that wins the other semifinal. But it's going to be emotional high of North Carolina beating Duke in the biggest game ever in the Duke-North Carolina rivalry. Carolina, an 8 seed, is going to be high and flying high. And you could say momentum carries over to Monday night. That's true. You also could be just exhausted by, because you figure this Duke-Carolina game is going to be a humdinger, don't you? Don't you think it's supposed to be?
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to be a blowout.
No.
It won't be a laugher. You ain't going to be able to rest your starters. And then, of course, there's the, you know, Duke angle with Coach K. And then there'll be probably, I mean, people talk about how Duke's, the pressure maybe is off now on Duke. I think if they go, I think, first of all, there's a lot of pressure on Duke because they're the 2 seed versus Carolina, the 8 seed. Carolina not supposed to be there. Duke could have been there. There's still pressure on, now we're 2 wins away from winning it all for Coach K. And they've handled the pressure here the last couple games, no doubt. But if you get in a national title game, I know Kansas is 1 seed, but wouldn't there maybe be more pressure on Duke? Because we're 1 win away,
yeah,
and we don't want Coach K to go out losing the national title game.
Yeah.
And maybe it works in reverse. Maybe it just they just rally to where they play the game of their lives and just kill Kansas in the championship, if Kansas gets there. But it is set up for Kansas to win it for Bill Self, and probably with his 7th best team.
Yeah, from the aspect of, I know you got to talk about things and figure out, hey, where does this team stack up against some that haven't? And I know that's that haven't made the Final Four, and I know that's obviously a talking point. But, yeah, in the end, nobody's going to care about that, right?
No.
If they win the national championship, it doesn't matter if it's the 2nd best team Bill Self's, if it's the best team Bill Self's ever had.
Right.
They got a trophy, and they're taking it home to Lawrence. That's mm-hmm. all that really matters if they win it. Nobody's going to talk about that after the championship, right, if they win it. It is a talking point right now because it does you go back and you think about, oh, what could have been, or this team was better than this, how did they not make it this far, and I think there's probably every school that's a blue blood probably has those teams, right?
Oh yeah.
And this team made it, but this team was way better than this one. How did they make it? You know, Kentucky was undefeated and didn't win a national championship, right? So they can forever say that, well, this team was better than all of those and didn't win.
Yeah.
And so, but
the 97
the next
Kansas
Kentucky team that wins, nobody didn't care that the 40-0 team or the team that didn't go 40-0 that went 39-0 or whatever it was. I don't know what
39-1
I think is what they ended.
38-1 because they would have had to win the semi and then the final.
Yeah, yeah, it would have been 38-1. Yeah, yeah. So you look at that. Nobody cares about that team if you won the national championship. We're not thinking about that because you actually won this one.
Right.
So, you know, it is talking point obviously going into the Final Four when you're looking for stuff to talk about, but it's not something that really comes to the forefront if you get the job done. For you and me, I think of our alma mater, right, in Trigo. They won the state championship in 2006. They were undefeated 22-0 in 2005 and lost the sub-state championship to Osborne and Smith Center.
Mm-hmm.
That team in 2005 was way better than the 2006 team as a collective whole.
Mm-hmm.
But they did some different things. They lost 3 games the next year but won the state title.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care.
Right.
Alma mater won the state title, right? Yeah. Like, I was excited that they won the state championship.
Right.
Didn't care about their 3 losses. Didn't care that the season before they were better.
Mm-hmm.
They got the title. And so, you know, those are some of the things that I think there's at every level you can see teams that were probably better
mm-hmm.
that just didn't finish the way you thought they might. And just maybe things went wrong for them. They had injuries or however it went.
Mm-hmm.
That team just didn't get the job done, and this team did. So
well,
you don't really remember that. And
No.
As you get further and further away from it.
Well, I think you see it in football. Alabama's had teams that are pretty darn talented that didn't win it, but then other years where they might not have been as good, but just a little bit closer. You know, Nebraska won titles in the 90s, but they had other good teams that didn't win a title. Oklahoma's had the same thing when it comes to football. I mean, you can use a lot of different examples. Ohio State's had some good teams and happened to trip up against, way back in the day, Michigan. Michigan, of course, has had some great teams and trip up against Ohio State. This year's Michigan team wasn't as good as other Michigan teams that kept losing Ohio State. I can assure you of that.
Yeah.
But they, you know, found a way to beat Ohio State this year. So it comes down to matchups. And there's some years it's harder than others. The field is harder.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that's the other thing. Or there's a tournament or a season where there's just clear-cut dominant team that you're not going to get through. Whereas this year, we said it coming in the tournament. There is no dominant team. I think I did, and I think a lot of people thought Gonzaga and Arizona might have been a little bit better than everybody else, but not like last year. Baylor and Gonzaga were clearly the two best teams all year long.
Yeah.
And guess what? Nobody got through them. Nobody got through them, and Baylor won the championship. This year, obviously, with just one seed left, and it's supposedly, people said, the weakest, or Baylor was the weakest, whatever. If Baylor is full strength, they wouldn't have been the weakest. But at the end of the day, there's no clear-cut front runner. There really wasn't. And so here we are with two twos and a one and an eight.
Yeah.
I was going to say, you don't have to go too far back in Kansas's history. They're kind of maybe the other team in one of these scenarios. It was North Carolina that was thinking, their sports shows are probably going, where does this Carolina team fit in the rankings of all-time teams, and it's the Tyler Hansborough
back
team.
In 08.
Mm-hmm. And you know, they went to the awards banquets and all that stuff and during the week, and then the game came and they just looked tired and flat and
got ran out of the
one
building
game situation got ran out of the building. And so, you know, you're right. It doesn't always work out. The New England Patriots are a good example. They went 18 and 0, and didn't get the Super Bowl against probably, you know, a wild card team from the NFC that was a 4 or 5 seed. Just not one of the greatest teams of all time to beat them. No, it was kind of maybe this year's Cincinnati Bengals that were just happened to get there.
And then a few years ago, they should have lost to the Chiefs. D Ford offside penalty. They make it the Super Bowl. That was one of their weaker teams, according to everybody.
Right.
And then they beat the Rams, scoring 13 points. That team wasn't even close to the team you just mentioned. Right. It was 18-0.
Yeah. So you got to finish the job if you're thought of that way. You got to finish the job. And like Dusty says, if you're one of those teams that maybe you don't feel are one of the greatest, it doesn't matter. You get it done, that banner is still going to be just as shiny and nice. And
you'll forever be remembered.
Yep.
Yeah.
Don't mean a thing without the ring.
Well, right? we'll give you the ultimate example, I think, one of the ultimate examples, and that's the, you know, the whole argument at the time when Golden State was rolling through the season, and everybody's like, well, you know, they're the greatest team of all time in NBA history. Well, they got 73 wins. They broke the Bulls record of 72 wins. And as everybody said, it only applies if they win at all. They're up 3-1. Draymond Green gets suspended. Next thing you know, as I said that year, you let it be a one-game winner-take-all. I don't care where the game is, and you have the greatest play on earth. You're in trouble, and LeBron did what he did, and Kyrie, they came down for 3-1. And do we look back? And I mean, do people actually go back and say the Warriors are the greatest team of all time?
No.
Well, they were. During the regular season, they were. But nobody counts that because they didn't get it done. They didn't, like you said, they didn't finish with the ring. The ring is the thing. And the Bulls are still considered the greatest team of all time in the NBA, according to many. And some is because Jordan was on the team. But clearly, they had the second most wins. But they actually won the title and the Warriors didn't. So how can you say the Warriors are, like, if you say the Patriots were 18-1, of course, they are one of the greatest teams of all time in National Football League history. But they didn't get a ring. So they get knocked down because they lost the one game. Of all the games they lost, it was the very last one. You know, we see it in high school basketball. The Centralia girls were undefeated and lost their very last game. They had a chance for a perfect season. And that goes back to something that you guys were talking about with different examples. And we don't have it this year. But Kentucky, undefeated. UNLV was undefeated, if I remember correctly. Indiana's the last team to go undefeated and win a national championship in college men's basketball. And there is so much pressure, whether it's a high school team, and we see high school teams, you know, go undefeated and win. We've seen Central Plains do it before, and it happens a lot. But there are teams that get so close, and then they lose that very last game, and it's considered a failure. It's like, how is a failure when you go 22-0 and dominate, and you just have one bad night? Well, when it happens, you're better off having a horrible night, the last regular season game,
game of the year on senior night and then never losing again. And I remember we talked about with St. John's Tipton back when they won the state title, that one of the best things that happened to them was having a loss. Because there, can you imagine, there is so much pressure thinking, not only are you going for a state title or a national championship or an NFL Super Bowl like the Patriots, you're trying to do something that rarely gets done, and that's have a perfect record, have the perfect season, and there is extra pressure on that. And when you get hit in the mouth, when you're the favorite, or you are trailing, then pressure mounts even more, especially when you're the favorite. But on top of that, you have a chance to make history, and I've told Dusty this 1,000 times, you know I have, and people listen to the show on a regular basis. So many times when teams, organizations, or even individuals are close, so close to making history, they fall just a bit short. It happened in horse racing for many years. Win the first two legs of Triple Crown, can't get the third. Now we've had a few recently. We have not had a perfect team in the NFL since the Dolphins. We have not had a perfect team in college basketball, and Gonzaga has had chances to do that and couldn't do it as recently as, weren't they undefeated last year? Is that right? Were they? One of these years are undefeated, yeah. Which the state was undefeated.
I was just going to bring that up.
There's pressure.
You talk about a team
right there.
That made a Final Four, yeah. Right? But they're 35-0, 34 going into the tournament, 34-0, 35-0 going.
That team was better than the team that made the Final Four.
Better than the team that made the Final Four.
But lost in the second round in a bad draw against Kentucky.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there is so much pressure on top of when you're the favorite, but then when you're the favorite and you're undefeated. You know, and I bet you Golden State going at game 7, well, we're the favorite. We're at home. I mean, we're supposed to win. We're up 3-1, and this is our game to make history. And we would be considered the greatest of all time. You know, the Seahawks were a one-yard run away from going back-to-back Super Bowl champions, which would be remembered forever. The Chiefs were one game away from doing the exact same thing. And it's hard to finish it.
Yeah, there's all kinds of things that, you know, in the middle of all that, but it does. It comes down to execution and getting the job done and being able to get the win when it counts in the end. So it's funny you're talking about that because, like, some of these teams, like, we don't talk about that with the Bulls, right? Like, oh, this team was better than this team because the Bulls' best team won.
Yes, every time.
Every time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And their best team won. They were 72-10 and
right.
Won the championship. So there's never going to be a situation with the Bulls in their franchise history where, like, oh, this team was better than this and didn't win. Now they had their best team won.
No,
right?
Every time.
The Lakers' best team probably won when they went 69-13, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, a lot of those times, now as a Spurs fan, I can say, hey, there's some teams that might have been better that didn't win and some teams that weren't that did win, right?
Sure.
And so there are some franchises, obviously, that you're going to say that about. And obviously the Warriors are, like you said, at the top of that list. You know, this team was better than any team they've ever had and did not win. And so that's what it comes down to, is you got to finish it out. And that was the motto in 96 with the Bulls. They had the shirts, right? Don't mean a thing without the ring.
Mm-hmm.
And it's unfortunately, it's true, because you just don't remember a lot about those teams if they falter and don't get the job done. And, I mean, you do if you're a fan of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you're just an outsider, outside looking in, like me trying to compare this team, KU's, to the 2010 team, I don't think very highly of the 2010 team, but they were a number one overall seed and a very, very good team for KU.
Right, absolutely.
But you don't think highly of them because they got knocked out in the second round.
By Northern Iowa.
Yeah, and so it's just like, you know, you got to finish it and people will remember you. And you know, this KU team has been able to get to where they needed to get, and, you know, they're going to be remembered probably more fondly than a lot of teams that, quite frankly, were better than this.
And that's why I say conference titles are great and all, but you're crazy if you don't trade half of those 14 for another title or two and a few more Final Four appearances.
Yeah.
Because that's what you're judged and remembered by, is what you do in March and then hopefully the first week of April.
Yeah.
And when you're a blue blood at Kansas, that's how you're judged. Fair or unfair, that's the expectations at a blue blood. And we've got 4 blue bloods, if you count Villanova, based on what they've done, obviously, with Jay Wright in the last 10 years. And there's a coach that has a couple of national titles to his credit.
Yeah.
And Villanova, KU and Villanova played 8 times since Bill Self's been head coach. Villanova's won 5 of those 8 meetings. And Villanova's beat KU in the Elite Eight. Villanova's beaten KU in the Final Four. KU did beat Villanova 1 year in the Sweet 16. That was before Jay Wright really got going. Mm-hmm. So I think there are some trepidation for KU fans that, okay, we're the favorite, but Jay Wright, Colin Gillespie, they're going to have something up their sleeve, and they're going to cause a matchup problem, and we're going to really have to fight to win. And I go back to this game that KU played at Villanova or in Philadelphia a couple years ago. KU was the number one team in the country. Villanova's ranked 18th. Villanova won.
Yeah.
And it was, guess what? It was a grinded out 56-55 game. I can see something happening like that on Saturday and see if Kansas can win a game in a lower scoring contest like that. And if that happens, well, if the game is in the 50s, it's a major advantage Villanova, without question.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean they're going to win, but it's a huge advantage. I think tempo is going to be huge. If KU can't get on transition,
oh, yeah,
and it's a
yeah,
slow it down half court game, and Villanova's going to milk clock, and Villanova's going to, they make their free throws, and KU didn't the last game. Let me tell you, if it comes down to a free throw shooting contest, KU's in deep, deep trouble. KU cannot afford to be down by, say, 8, 9, 10 points, maybe at any point in this game. They're going to have to be, in my opinion, they're going to have to be front runners in this game. Take it to them and at least control things enough to where you have the lead most of the game. You get down by 7 or 8 against Villanova, it feels like 15. Because they shorten the game. Because they know they don't have the firepower, and that's what well-coached teams do. They play their strengths. Jay Wright's had teams that can shoot it, get up and down.
You know they had the firepower when they put him in the Final Four.
Oh, I know. I saw it up front and personal. The game was over in 4 minutes.
Yeah.
Everybody's all excited to get in the game. The amazing laser light show of the starting lineups, and KU fans are going crazy, and everybody's excited. And then these annoying Villanova fans from Philadelphia sitting right behind, and they're just going off because every single guy on their team is making three after three, blindfolded, upside down. They couldn't miss. And I'm sitting there going, well, they can't keep this up. I even told the guy behind me, I turned to the fan, I said, you enjoy this because we will make a run. That's what I said. KU will make a run, because they usually do. I said, KU will make a run. And I turned to the guy and I said, and you can't keep shooting like this the whole game. 10 minutes in the second half, I turned, I said, I'm wrong. Yeah. And he was like, yeah, I didn't think we would either. He didn't think it would keep going. Mm. And it was just, you know, it was like, thank God San Antonio was a cool town and we at least had some fun. Because the game was just a complete waste of time in a way.
Villanova's another one. I don't think they're sitting in their sports shows going, you know, I think this team's one of the best of all. No.
Oh, no. No.
That team that beat Carolina with the last second shot, that team would beat this year's team.
Oh, by 20.
Yeah, by 20. You know, and in a 7-game series, they probably sweep them or whatever.
Yes.
So it's just, but again, they're not going to care if Villanova squeaks out two more games. They're going to just be just as happy as the last one.
Listen, Villanova's playing the underdog card major right now, and they should. Mm. They should be sitting here going, listen, there's no way we're going to beat Kansas. The Villanova sports talk people in Philadelphia and wherever else, I got to be sitting here saying, listen, we've had a great run. We're playing with house money. We lost more. We basically have no chance. We got to just hope KU plays poorly. Woe is me. You know, they're playing that card right now. And I guarantee you Villanova is going to use that as a rallying cry. And they're going to say, nobody thinks we can win. And you know what? You know when you get in the tournament in a one-game-and-done format, that's scary when you play a team that feels like, and they're not disrespected, they're just an underdog. They're shorthanded. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, the way KU played in the second half, where they look like they could be anybody on earth, and then you go against Villanova, it's going to be a completely different game. Villanova's not going to just chuck threes in the second half and panic like Miami did.
I always get nervous when somebody starts talking a lot and a lot and a lot about a guy that's injured that's not playing.
Yes.
Right.
The very first game after the injury is the most dangerous
game,
time.
Yeah. And it's just like, I hate that. If I'm a K-State fan or if you're a KU fan, you probably hate it. You know, it's like these people are just talking and talking and talking about this guy being gone. They're going to put a game plan together.
Sure they will. They have a week to prepare for
without
it,
the guy. And it's like, you know, just because he's injured doesn't make Villanova a terrible team. One guy doesn't make a team. And so they will figure it out. And what you just said about Jay Wright is an example of how teams are going to figure it out, right?
Sure.
They got coaches that understand what their personnel is every time they go onto the floor. And they know what their strengths are and they know what their weaknesses are. If you're a good coach, and Jay Wright's obviously a good coach.
Oh, absolutely.
And Bill Self's a good coach. And all the coaches are still alive, except we don't know a whole lot about Hubert Davis, obviously.
Right.
But, you know, we know that Coach K is a good coach and knows his personnel most of the time. And so they'll figure out ways to make it work. But I always get nervous when people start talking about injuries and things like that, of guys that are out. And it's like, well, yeah, cool. They're out. I don't care. go out and play. Don't, because that'll seep into your players' heads, yes, too, and they start thinking about those things like, oh, we should be able to breeze through this one.
All you got to do is go back to the second round of this tournament. Creighton lost their defensive player of the year in their center, and KU barely beat them. And Bill Self said, people think, well, they're short a guy. Well, what happens is guys rally around somebody that gets hurt. That's what Villanova's going to do on Saturday. I'm sure of that. They're KU's going to get Villanova's best shot. I don't think KU's going to roll Villanova. If they do, that's great. But Bill Self said you're harder to scout for a team because they played completely different. Creighton was jacking threes, and they shot a better percentage in that game than any other game this year because they knew they had to. They didn't have the big guy inside. That was their way to beat Kansas, and they nearly pulled it off. And so we see teams that have a key guy that gets hurt in the very next game, they tend to rally around him. We saw it with Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs, where they at least won one of their two games, but Matt Moore played well in place of him. They lost to the Packers in a tight game on Monday night, and then they rallied the wagons. Now, is Chad Henne going to do really well, or not Chad Henne, but Matt Moore all year long? No, but for a short period of time, you see teams rally around one another when there's an injury or something that bad that happens, and those teams can be scary.
Yeah.
The next guy off the bench, he's probably a good player, great too. He was probably a good high school player, and he's gone scholarship for a reason. He gets his shot to get some highway miles out there. And then the guy that hasn't been playing that gets to fit into the rotation, he's been chomping at the bit. So, you know, yeah, you're right. That first game after an injury is the scariest. You had a good point with that, Dusty. Yeah.
That was me, but that's okay.
All right, yeah.
Well, it'll be fun. We'll talk more about the Final Four coming up, obviously, pregame at 4:30 on Saturday from New Orleans. The Royals, speaking of scoring, 19 runs yesterday after scoring 12 on Sunday, which means opening day they will be no hit. 19 runs beating the Cleveland Guardians. If you don't know who the Cleveland Guardians are, they were formerly the team known as Prince. No, formerly known as the Indians. They're not a new team. They're not an expansion team. They're the Guardians. 19-9, the Royals won. Hit four home runs, two for Andrew Benintendi. Zach Greinke picked up his first win of the spring as well. Gave up three runs and three and a third. Six hits. Not great, but don't matter. It's spring training. And the Royals now 6-3 in spring training. They face the Mariners this afternoon. Albert Pujols is back with the St. Louis Cardinals. He was going to end his career where it began. I always think of Albert Pujols as a St. Louis Cardinal. Mm-hmm. I'm not a Cardinal fan, but I identify that he is a Cardinal. And he's going to play one more year, $2.5 million to be the Cardinals. And it works because it works out perfectly. The stars align because the National League now has a DH. The new rules, if you don't know, both leagues are doing DH. No more pitchers hitting. So that extends Albert Pujols one more year. Because without the DH National League, I think Albert Pujols is forced to retire.
Yeah.
But he's going to get one year. He's going to play DH or platoon at DH possibly. And Albert Pujols is one of the quietest, humble superstars you've ever seen. And I just admire him for the way he's done so many things off the field. You don't see him going up and slapping anybody. he just handles himself with decorum. And he doesn't have a massive ego. He doesn't go around whining about not getting awards or that I was wronged in a contract negotiation. I can't think of a time. I think he always takes the high road. He's been an ambassador for baseball. Once again, baseball failed Albert Pujols and all the superstars of their league because he should be a bigger star than he is. But one, he's more humble, a little quieter, but also Major League Baseball didn't get to do a good job of promoting one of the best players in the history of baseball. I mean, his numbers are insane. And there are a few people that wanted to insinuate that he was on roids or doing this or performance-enhancing stuff, and there's never been a time where Albert Pujols has been in trouble with any of that.
No.
And Albert Pujols, I'm going to pull up his numbers here, because they are honestly, quite frankly, mind-boggling. Albert Pujols, in his career, and he started in 2001, so this will be his 21st season. Albert Pujols has 679 home runs. He has 2,150 RBIs. His career batting average is just under 300, and if he hadn't played the last three years, he would have been over 300. A guy that's an extra base machine, 672 doubles in his career, and also was a pretty good first baseman in his prime, not a bad defender at all. He won the MVP back-to-back years. And 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Think about this for a second. 10 out of 11 years. There was an 11-year span. 10 of those 11 years, Albert Pujols finished no worse than 5th in the MVP voting. A decade straight, the guy wasn't outside the top 5.
Yeah.
He was his rookie year. He was rookie of the year. He was 4th in the MVP voting. His second year, 2nd, then 2nd again, then 3rd, then MVP, then 2nd, then 9th, the one outlier. MVP, MVP, runner-up, and 5th. The guy has 3 MVP awards, and he has 4 runner-ups. This guy could have 7 MVPs. He also has won World Series with the Cardinals, so he's a champion. This is a guy that gets overlooked, in my opinion, because kind of like Tim Duncan with the Spurs. You get overlooked because you're not flashy. You're not Randy Moss. You're not Fernando Tatis. You're not LeBron, like Tim Duncan. You're not Shaq. You're not as, and can you dig it? You don't see Tim Duncan saying those type of things. Tim Duncan and Albert Pujols are two of the quietest superstars you'll ever come across that have done great things off the court and off the field as well, that seem to be tremendous people that are honestly kind of underrated in some cases and don't get as much attention as they deserve, and yet part of that's because they don't crave it or seek it.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm a Spurs fan, so I've always said Tim Duncan was the most underappreciated player that I've ever seen in the NBA, right, as far as the appreciation for what he does.
And I think Pujols is one of those
that
in
for Major League Baseball. I really think he is the face of that for Major League Baseball.
Yes.
Because he was in St. Louis, and it's not an attractive town for, the people on the coast, right?
In the Midwest.
The right and left coast, and
from Independence, Missouri.
Exactly. And that's the thing that always bothers me the most about it, right? He's right in the Royals' backyard, and he had this outstanding career with the Cardinals. He went to the same high school Skylar Thompson went to, actually. I was just looking up, where did he go to school when he was in Independence, and went to Fort Osage, and that's where Skylar went. But, that's what always bothered me about it. He's right in the backyard. You could have drafted him, could have had him as a Royal. But again, you always think about other guys that have been from the town, and just like maybe he was better off not being in his hometown, starting his major league career and things like that. But it's always a what could have been. You wish he could have been a Royal instead of a Cardinal, and have you have all the respect in the world for him, but you would have had an insane amount of love for him too if he was on your team, no matter what that team was. So,
right.
I feel like he's very underappreciated. I don't think underrated, maybe as far as what the league thinks of him, but maybe as far as what the media might think of him.
Yeah, absolutely. And you think about when he was drafted back in 1999, he was a 13th round draft pick.
Yeah.
That means the Royals passed on him 12 times, as did everybody else.
Yep.
He's right there in the backyard, moved to that area in high school, Fort Osage High School, hit 450-foot home run in high school. The tape measure shot. The question was, what position would he play? And it worked out pretty well. And he played in the National League, where you would have thought he'd end up being a DH because there's questions of where he'd play defensively. He ended up being a good first baseman, yep, and playing in the National League his entire career. So, I really hope he
played for the Angels a little bit.
He did a little bit.
It wasn't much.
But he's 21 home runs short of 700. Now, do you think he'll get there in St. Louis with 21 homers? I'm guessing probably not. But gosh, I'd love to see him get to 700. That'd be awesome. And I'm a Royals fan, but I'm an Albert Pujols fan.
Worked at a TV station, and we were there early. We had to be there about 4:30. We had a guy, big St. Louis fan, big Albert fan, had the jerseys, all that stuff. Well, he must have missed it during the night when he signed with the Angels. But he finds out the next morning, 4:30, 4:45, he calls his brother on the phone at 4:30 in the morning, runs outside and just starts screaming into the phone about how Pujols is now gone off the Cardinals. And we're just like, what are you doing? Your brother can't appreciate this phone call at 4:30 in the morning.
Yeah, right.
And he, the guy was outside and he's just yelling. He's yelling about the owners. And I don't remember the contract negotiations, but he was upset. the day that the Cardinals lost Albert Pujols. And
absolutely.
I just so there were years where the Cubs handled him pretty good numbers-wise. Like, if you just looked at the numbers, it'd be okay. They would hold their best reliever for Albert Pujols, and it worked out a lot. But there was also times where it'd be come down to that third game of the series. Each team is 1-1. Are you going to win the series? Are you not going to win the series? And he might be 2 of 11 that seventh inning at bat, and you just knew he was going to crush one. He was just going to crush one, or he was going to get a big hit, drive in a run, and he was slow. He was slow.
No, he's not a fast guy. No.
But
116 stolen bases in his career.
He was decent at picking spots to get that stolen base, and he always did it against the Cubs, and he just did those little things. Not only could he just crush home runs so far, but he did those little things too that just won games and just crushed Cubs. I mean, his numbers weren't the greatest, but he just killed the Cubs.
In his prime, he didn't miss pitches.
No.
And he didn't miss pitches for about a decade. You look at the numbers, just to appreciate Albert Pujols. Listen to these numbers. Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. First 12 years in the league. Are you ready for this? I just told you over a decade. So he was durable. He didn't get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't just a home run hitter that struck out all the time. I mean, he put the ball in play. I mean, his batting average is almost 300 for his career. But this was, first of all, this was his batting averages his first 10 years. You ready? This is just batting average. 329, 314, 359 led the league. 331, 330, 331, 327, 357, 327, 312. It wasn't until he was 31, his last year with the Cardinals, that he hit under 300.
Yeah.
Now, how about this? Listen to this. This is numbers, home runs and RBIs. When he's 21, 37 homers, 130 RBIs. When 22, 34 and 127. 23, 43 and 124. When he was 24, 46 homers, 123 RBIs. In 25, when he was 25, he went 41 and 117. And when he was 26, 49 homers, 137 RBIs. He's 27, 32 homers, 103 RBIs. 28, 37 homers, 116 RBIs. 29, 47 homers, led the league, 135 RBIs. He hit 30. He's going to fall off. 42 homers, 118 RBIs. His final year in St. Louis, 37 homers, 99 RBIs, hit 299, and was fifth in MVP voting. He goes to the Dodgers his first year, 30 homers, 105 RBIs. The guy in his first 12 seasons, the only time he hit less than 100 RBIs was 99. His lowest home run output in his first 12 years in the league was 30. The guy didn't miss games. He didn't have his stats skewed because he missed 3 weeks. The guy was they called him a robot.
Yeah.
Right.
He didn't show a personality. He was like, this guy's like the cyborg of Major League Baseball. Dude, there is nobody, I don't think there's anybody in Major League Baseball history that has been that consistent for 12 years at the plate.
I don't know.
I'd like to challenge somebody to find somebody. There might be, but in the modern day era, no way.
Yeah. I don't know all the advanced stats, but I do know OPS. I know that one.
Oh, his OPS
well.
Is off the charts, yeah. Crazy good.
So an average player is like about 750, somewhere around there. He's got some of those years, as I can see there. They're 1,000. They're 1,100. That is a player and a half.
Yes.
In his prime. I mean, I know not everybody understands those stats, but as a point of reference, that is literally an average player and a half.
No doubt.
Yep. So it is just.
You know, by the way, he got intentionally walked quite a bit, and that took away from some of his numbers and still put him up.
Mm-hmm.
It's just people don't appreciate how great Albert Pujols was, because when he came to the plate, I know when the Royals and Cardinals played the interleague series, you know, I remember I was at a Cardinal Royals game a couple times, and when Albert Pujols came to the plate, I was scared. Because I was like, dear Lord, he's going to do something good. Yeah. Every single time he can't play it, I was just hoping there's nobody on base. Yeah. Because I knew the Royals pitching wasn't very good then either.
And
so.
Certain guys that make you stop and watch them too. Yes. When you come to the plate too. You're out at the baseball game. You're just you're focused on all the outside stuff that's going on. But when you hear that name, Albert Pujols, you're going to stop. You're going to watch, see what happens. It could be bad for your team.
Yes.
But, you want to see what's going on.
Well, it's cool that he's going to end his career, it looks like, with the Cardinals. And you know, not as big of a deal for some, but Zach Greinke's been a tremendous pitcher that may be in the Hall of Fame. He might probably be borderline. I don't know if he'll make it or not. But he now comes all the way back full circle to end his, well, we think end his career at the Royals. He says this is not going to be his last year, so we'll see if he comes back another year for the Royals or goes somewhere else. But I think it's kind of cool that I don't want to bring everybody back from when Greinke was with the Royals. I don't want to see, you know, oh, goodness, who was the pitcher that made the All-Star team with a horrible year? I don't want to see Mark Redmond back with the Royals. You know, but Zach Greinke.
We don't need Jimmy Gobble back.
No,
here, right?
Jimmy Gobble, who, you know, thought he was going to be a really good pitcher and didn't pan out. Okay, and we end with a couple things here. The Chiefs, Andy Reid spoke about the Tyreek Hill trade, and he said, hey, there's no rift with Tyreek Hill. Here's what Andy Reid said, and I quote, I love Tyreek Hill. There's no rift between Tyreek Hill and myself. I thought he deserved an opportunity if that's where he wanted to go. He's a family man that has a few kids, and he's got to be able to support them now and down the road, and this gives him an opportunity to do that. At the same time, it gives us great compensation. We came in aggressive with a contract offer, and after we got to a point, we just said, listen, in this day and age, you have issues you have to deal with, and that regards the cap. So we felt like it was better to allow him to go ahead and be traded. You can go different routes with a player. You can play hardball, or you can go about it the way I did or we did. And I mean, this is the way to handle it. If the Chiefs didn't give Tyreek Hill his money, and they did not agree to trade him, he would have held out.
Oh, for sure.
And he would have been a distraction. And I'm not saying Tyreek Hill would be doing the wrong thing by holding out. He should get his money because Davante Adams got his money. Or people could say, fulfill your contract and then get your money. Whatever way you want to look at it. That's just not how it works in sports, unfortunately, whether you like it or not. And so I think Andy Reid's absolutely right. They had a certain point, a line in the sand, how much they were willing to spend. And I'm telling you, the Davante Adams deal blew everything up for the Chiefs to keep Tyreek Hill. And maybe that'll be a blessing in disguise a few years from now. We'll say, well, thank goodness Davante Adams did get a whole big contract with the Raiders.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. I
thought the Chiefs should give that much to a wide receiver.
No, not at all.
And the Chiefs were willing to give a lot to him.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's – you'll hit that point where you've moved on and – once you get, I mean, obviously it's fresh right now because there's nothing else that's going on except free agency, right? There's been no draft. There's been no OTAs, mini camp, anything like that. But once that stuff starts happening, you'll start moving further away from it. And if the Chiefs have success without Tyreek Hill, it obviously softens the blow. And then you'll find out, you know, 3-4 years from now that probably it did end up being the right move, right?
Mm-hmm.
To get those guys that they might be able to draft and just not replace him as far as his production and what he's going to do by himself, but use 3-4 different guys to soften that blow and then replace it eventually, and then you just move on with life, right?
You got to retool. Every year you really do have to retool in the National Football League. And the great thing about the NFL is you can go from bad to great in 1 year. We saw the Bengals go from not good to great. We've seen the Rams do it. We've seen the Chiefs do it 1 year, 2-14 to 11-5, and win a playoff game. I mean, for crying out loud, in NFL, it's like a baseball where you're building step by step. Usually, it takes a while to get there. And the NBA, I think there's more of a process as well. But the NFL, you can get good in a hurry, really, really quickly. So that's why you just don't sit there and go, well, we're going to tank for 3 years. That's probably not the way to do it. Whereas baseball, of course, we know that's what teams have done. Tyrann Mathieu, still unsigned. In regards to teams interested in him, the Colts have been mentioned. The Texans, where he used to play, that'd be rebuilding in Houston. Whereas I think Mathieu would want to – the ideal situation is go to a contender and get paid. But what if you – have to take less to go to a contender or get your money for your final contract and go to a team that's rebuilding? Colts have been mentioned. That's a team that's, you know, playoff caliber. Should have been in the playoffs last year. Somebody's even thrown out the Raiders, but I don't think the Raiders have the cap space or anything going on. Plus, they're working on an extension with Derek Carr. I doubt he'll be in division, but he is still unsigned. And there are some other notable players that are unsigned. Bobby Wagner's still available out there, and they're taking their time, these two guys, to get the big deals that they think they deserve or that they will hopefully get. They might not get as much as people think. But for those that are sitting here going, well, if the price is right, we could bring on Mathieu back. No, that ain't happening. The Chiefs aren't going to spend on all these safeties. That's just not smart business. So it'll be interesting to see where he lands. I would prefer him to land in the NFC myself, but wherever he goes, I'm not going to be scared of him. That's for sure.
Yeah.
But he was maybe the best free agent signing in Chiefs history. And then we end with this, the NBA. It's coming down to the wire. And this is crazy stuff. If you're a basketball fan, in the Eastern Conference, there are eight games to play, basically. Six to eight games, depending on who you are. In the Eastern Conference, there are four teams within a game of the number one seed. You never see this. You never see it.
No.
And the Celtics took over the number one seed the other day, and it was the latest in NBA history that a team has taken over a one seed in a conference in the history of the NBA. So the Celtics, they lost. They lost a very, very good player in Robert Williams to a torn meniscus in his knee. He's their best defensive player, and he does a lot of pick-and-roll action. It's a huge blow for the Celtics, who have been red hot, and they lost the Raptors last night without Robert Williams. Not Robin Williams, but Robert Williams. And so here's the standings in the East. The Heat have a one-game lead. The Sixers and the Bucks and the Celtics are all one game back. Four teams within a game with like 6 to 8 games to play. The Bulls are in the 5 spot. The Raptors are in the 6. They've really come around. The Cavaliers, Dean Wade out for the rest of the season. Did you see that with the knee procedure?
Yeah.
So he's done. They're the 7. And the Nets, with Kevin Durant and now Kyrie Irving going to be able to play all the games now with some mandates lifted, the Nets right now only have a half game lead over the Hornets for the 9 spot, only a game ahead of the Hawks for the 10, but they'll be in the play-in no worse. So you could have the Nets playing the number one seed in the first round. That's one of the worst 8 seeds you ever possibly want to see if you're a 1 seed.
Yeah.
And in the West, you got the Suns. They got the 1 seed wrapped up. The Grizzlies are red hot. They're going to be the 2 seed. And the Warriors now fall to a 3. They're just trying to get healthy. Curry's been out. Thompson was banged up. Green has been out. They're just trying to get everybody back. Now the Mavericks have moved all the way up to within a game and a half of the Warriors. The Warriors could slide to the 4 seed. And we've been talking all year long in the NBA. Hey, Warriors-Suns, Western Conference Finals. What a series that'll be. The Warriors might be in the semifinals, which I don't want to see in the semifinals. I want to see in the finals. Yeah. But we might see that. And then the Jazz are a 5 seed. The Nuggets are a 6, which is amazing what they've done without Jamal Murray. No, Jokic really should be back-to-back MVPs. Timberwolves are the 7. Clippers are the 8. Pelicans are a 9. And Dusty's going to love this part, and I don't know how close you've been following this.
I'm following it,
the Lakers,
sure.
Yeah. The Lakers are a 10, but the Spurs now have won 4 in a row, and the Spurs are a half game out of the play-in. I would roll and laugh hysterically and giggle like a child if the Lakers don't even make the play-in tournament and the Spurs, with no real superstars whatsoever, so a lot of people can't even name a player on the Spurs. If you're a Spurs fan, you can. And the Lakers got AD, Westbrook, Carmelo, LeBron, and the Lakers don't make it in, and the Spurs take the last spot, and the Lakers don't even get a play-in game, I think that would be hilarious. So I am a big Spurs fan as well now. Yeah.
DeJounte Murray is going to be that guy that nobody knows that's going to be really, really good and underappreciated, right, for the Spurs. Listen, the only satisfaction I'm going to take in the fact that the Spurs get to number 10 is because they're overtaking LeBron.
Yeah, because you know they're not going
to. Not even the Lakers part of it, right? It's just the LeBron part of it.
All right, gotcha.
It's just they're overtaking LeBron. I hate it. I despise it. This team is not worthy of having any chance of doing anything in the playoffs. Now,
they're 13 under 500.
The way they're playing right now, they are.
Yeah.
They're actually, the last month, they've actually been playing pretty good ball. You know, made some trades, got rid of some older guys, and they're just going with their young guys right now and developing them. And so the way they're playing right now, I probably should take that back a little bit because they are playing really good right now. But this team does not deserve to be sniffing playoffs if you look at what they've been this season. So, again, we've talked about that before, but I don't like it. I want to get to the playoffs in a real way.
You want to be legitimate?
Yeah. And even if they win, I guess they earn that spot if they can go ahead and beat the 9 and then beat whoever wins the 7 and 8 and take the 8 seed.
I don't know what the Spurs schedule is here. I'm gonna try to pull it up real quick to close the show here to put a little bow on it, because the Spurs are half game out of the 10th spot. Listen to the Lakers schedule the rest of the way. They're at Dallas, who's red hot tonight, and there's rumors that LeBron and AD both won't play.
Yeah.
Which to me tells me LeBron's giving up on the season, basically. Then they got to go to Utah, host New Orleans, which is a game ahead of them in the standings. That's a pretty big game.
Yeah.
Host Denver, at Phoenix, at Golden State, home against Oklahoma City, which they blew 225-point leads against OKC earlier. That would be hilarious if they lost to OKC. And at that point, they might just quit. They might be out.
Yeah.
And then at Denver. That is a tough, tough, tough schedule. And I love to see it.
Yeah.
And then the Spurs schedule the rest of the way.
It's not that tough. It's not that tough.
No. Not as tough as the Lakers.
No.
The Spurs have the Grizzlies. Well, that's tough.
Yeah.
But Portland back-to-back, they're not very good. No Damian Lillard. No C.J. McCollum anymore. He was traded. The Nuggets, the Timberwolves aren't great. The Warriors, who are really floundering and probably arrest a lot of people the second last game of the year if they already know their seeding.
Yeah.
And then you finish with the Mavericks, and they might do the exact same thing and arrest people and allow the Spurs in.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm loving this. I didn't realize the Spurs had come that close to the Lakers now. This is fantastic. Yeah, it just made my day.
We've been talking about it in a group I'm in on Facebook. But, it's for me, I will enjoy the fact that LeBron's not in the playoffs or even have a chance to make the playoffs in the play-in game if that happens. But, I'm tempering my excitement right now.
And it's going to be LeBron's legacy is in stone. I mean, he's good.
And
that's great. But this is a bit of a black eye. When you compare LeBron to Jordan, this is a black eye. When you've got talent that he basically helped recruit, and they're not even a winning team and can't even make a playoff field that is 10 teams deep, and Jordan, you only had 8 made it.
Yeah. Before they won it in the bubble or whatever, that season before that, it was the same thing. It was like this, right? They checked out.
Yes, sir.
Like LeBron checked it all out.
Can you imagine Michael Jordan having a team that checked out?
No.
I can't. But different eras, who knows? But go
Spurs.
Go Spurs.
I will say that it's a different era.
No question.
He's not the only one that would do this.
Because now we have load management. I thought the idea was to play when you get paid millions of dollars. But, hey, if you can sit and collect, I do the same thing. So why should I complain?
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.